panel.
All right, let's get into it now, both provincial and federal politics, of course, because it is budget day here in Ontario. Joining me on the line, Bob Richardson, Senior Counsel at National Public Relations, Jamie Ellerton, Principal at Canaptus Limited, and Sally Hauser, Senior Consultant at Navigator Limited. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Tasha.
Hi, Tasha. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, indeed. Well, it's going to be a long afternoon because the budget's coming down this afternoon. And we already know probably a lot that's going to be in it. Kathleen Wynne's been announcing spending for almost 2 weeks now. Bob, I get there's an election coming, but really, is this over the top even for an election like this?
Well, number one, most budgets, whether it's this government or other governments, usually spend the 2 weeks before pre-announcing various aspects of it. So this is no different than, I think, what we've seen for a number of years. But they've got a lot of good things to talk about. They've got a lot of good things to talk about on the growth side. They've got great stuff to talk about on unemployment. Debt to GDP ratio is steady or declining. And they've invested a ton of money into infrastructures like hospitals, healthcare, transit and others. So, you know, I think they've got a lot of good news to tell. Charles Souza's done a good job in the last 5 or 6 years, and we're pretty comfortable with where things are at.
Okay, Jamie, do you share the same rosy view that Bob does?
Yeah, absolutely not, Tasha. This is clearly a government that after 15 years is out of gas, is having some deathbed conversion as they continue to try and consolidate votes on the left. And the CBC, of all places, was actually speculating earlier today that perhaps we'll see a tax cut as a way of showing that they get that families are hurting after 15 years of Liberal government. This has been nothing but a last-breath desperation attempt to essentially buy people off for their votes, and I hope the people of Ontario will be smarter than that.
Okay, Sally, I'm wondering here, with all the spending and all these areas that are traditionally interests of the NDP, particularly childcare now, the latest one, is this just the Liberals trying to eat the NDP's lunch?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's kind of every election across the country, federal and provincial. You see this, the Liberals campaign on the left and government from on the right. You know, obviously they're announcing all this spending now after kind of starving services for most of their tenure. I think people are willing to accept that deficit and that level of spending if they actually believe the Liberals are going to do it. And that's what I don't know about now. It seems like kind of a conversion on the road to Damascus. They've been there for 15 years and had the chance to put some money into these very important public services, and we haven't seen that yet. If by some miracle they happen to get reelected, I don't think we'll see it in the future either. I think that's something they'd back down from.
Okay, Bob, do you think the public will buy this new religion? I mean, is there a danger that there'll be sort of cynical backlash for that exact reason? It's like, where have you been the last 15 years?
Well, where have they been? Let's just take one topic, healthcare. There's 7,000 more nurses out across Ontario, dozens of new hospitals. There's a new...
Yeah, but people are waiting in the hallways. People are, overcapacity is an issue.
There's a new school that's making a huge difference in rural northern Ontario. And wait times, quite frankly, are down from the levels that they were 15 years ago, if you want to use that as a comparison. So to suggest that nothing has gone on and nothing has happened and no spending has occurred and no progress has been made in 15 years is nonsense, and it needs to be called out.
Okay. Well, all I've heard is announcements of spending. I haven't actually heard, Jamie, the government massively defending its record. Bob, you just did a better job, I think, than Kathleen Wynne's been doing of defending the record. So I'm just wondering, Jamie, are they wanting to remind people of the record? Because a lot of people think it's not as good as Bob's been making it out to be.
No, they're not going to want to remind people of their record. Obviously, the government of Ontario has continued to operate for the past 15 years, and the sky has not fallen, but that doesn't mean that there are a ton of problems. And let's not forget, this is a government that has been plagued by scandal. We can talk about the gas plants. We can talk about Orange. We can talk about favorable contracts for Liberal insiders. These are all things that if you start looking backwards as a Liberal, it takes you down a rabbit hole you don't want to go on. So the best they have to offer is to open up the cupboard, spend what's there, and then go to your neighbors and spend more and hope that you buy it.
Yeah, I hear you chuckling, Bob. But I do think that there's an element of truth in what Jamie said. I just wonder, Sally, I'm going to ask you the question, the scandals that he's mentioned, are they going to be the issue? I mean, at the end of the day, are people just going to say, look, it's the bottom line, including this budget, that's going to decide my vote?
You know, I think you're at a point here, and with the Wynne government having been massively unpopular in every kind of form of polling for a long time now. And, you know, I always I had a colleague say to me once, the difference in politics in an election is that if people are hot against you, if they're angry, you know, you can still kind of win an election. But when people go cold, when they just, they're done with you, when they just kind of don't even care to argue with you on the doorstep anymore, that's when you know that you're kind of done for. And I frankly think that that's where the liberals are right
now. It's like divorce. Yeah, okay. So you don't want to even, you know, you just don't care enough to argue anymore.
Look, it's tough after 15 years for any government.
The marriage is over? Is that what you're saying?
Accumulate some problems. There's no doubt about that. But overall, they've done a lot of good things. They need to remind people of that. I think they've done a poor job of reminding some of the people of some of the things that they've done over the last 15 years.
Okay, we're going to switch gears, go federal for a sec here, because some other people are being accused of doing a poor job, and that is the Trudeau government doing a poor job on transparency. You might remember when they came into power before, in fact, in the 2015 election, Justin Trudeau said his government was going to be far more transparent than Stephen Harper's, lift the, you know, the curtains of secrecy, you're going to magically fly away, and everything's going to be great, new rules for access to information, all this stuff. Well, none of that's really happened. Access to information legislation was actually condemned by the previous commissioner for information, the outgoing one. She said that the bill there doesn't have enough teeth. And lately, there's been a lot of back and forth on the issue of the India trip and what the government may or may not be telling us about the implication or the involvement of Jaspar Atwal, the former convicted terrorist sympathizer who showed up at an event. And the government then sort of said that one of their security advisors, he apparently told the media that this might have been a plant, the inside job by the Indian government. The Conservatives have been trying to get Danielle Jean, this official, to testify before Parliament for weeks now. They actually filibustered in the House, which means they pulled an all-nighter last week because the government refuses to let Danielle Jean speak to Parliament to say why he came up with this conspiracy theory, or if indeed he did. Take a listen to an exchange that took place yesterday between the Prime Minister and Conservative leader Andrew Scheer.
What the issue is here is the leader of the official opposition so wants to be able to play political games with this issue that he plugs his ears, refuses to know the truth, and is continually refusing to get a full classified briefing on this situation.
The only reason why the Prime Minister is offering me a briefing for classified information in my capacity as a Privy Councillor is to prevent me from asking questions about his disastrous trip in India and the cover-up that he helped orchestrate.
Okay, Bob, I got to start with you on this one again, because I'm wondering, why are the Liberals doubling down on this? They promised transparency, now they won't let this guy talk to Parliament. What's at stake here? Why are they digging in their heels so deep?
Well, number one, I disagree with your premise on transparency right off the top. So
what do you disagree with in terms of that?
Compared to the previous government had contempt for the House of Commons, shackled scientists and ambassadors, fired people, and it was led by the warm, open, and transparent former prime minister we had. Give me a break. There was more transparency in some Soviet era governments than we saw in the Harper administration. So let's not exactly hold that up as some sort of paragon of virtue. On these issues, these guys have been open and transparent. They've gone coast to coast. He does town halls. He doesn't hide from Canadians. They've accepted responsibility when they've made mistakes and apologized, like he did on the Aga Khan. They work with the provinces and get together with people. They don't show contempt the way it was done last time. They don't have anything to apologize for on this. They've offered him a briefing. If he wants to take it, he should do it. They set up a National Security Committee of the House of Commons, which includes members of Parliament who are New Democrats and who are conservatives. Let them take a look at it if there are national security implication. If there aren't, then they should go out and they should have other opportunities to speak to the guy. But surely the first route is to go to that committee and have it considered there.
Okay, Jamie, the Conservatives aren't letting this go. I mean, Bob's making the case. Why not just get the briefing and then look at it later? Why is that not good enough?
Well, if you look at even how they initially responded to on this, this could have been a one-day story in the middle of his India trip. They threw a BC MP under the bus, blaming him for Atwal ending up on the invitation list. The story didn't go away while it continued to be dogged by his Indian clothing photo ops and the ongoing kind of disaster that was playing with back here in Canadian media. And then they rolled out the National Security Advisor for a secret briefing to reporters. not to be attributed. And now, weeks later, we're almost 2 months after the fact, they were trying to be too cute by half by saying, oh, we'll give you a briefing if only you stop talking about this. It's just incredulous. This is a government that has kind of bungled these sorts of things time and time again. They continue to believe their own rhetoric in talking about these things and very basic things of accountability and transparency. They continue to have them dog them in the press because they dig in their heels, and what could be a 1 or 2 day story drags on for weeks. So the government has to really look at how they're dealing with these things, how they're talking to Canadians, and actually just have the humility to say sorry every now and then and admit they screwed up.
Yeah, I wonder, Sally, you know, I remember the Duffy affair, and there, in fact, Justin Trudeau was very, very hot for the Prime Minister to speak. He said Mr. Harper continues to ignore the calls for answering questions, for explaining why people like, you know, Nigel Wright have been involved in a cover-up. That was his chief of staff. They wanted people to resign in the PMO. You know, is there a certain hypocrisy here in terms of how this affair is now being dealt with?
Well, you know, going back to transparency, it's one thing when you're in opposition, it's very easy to call for more transparency. And then you get into government and you realize...
Yeah, you want to hide everything.
It's not that great to be super, super transparent all the time. One thing in that clip you played of Justin Trudeau, of him saying, you know, refuse to accept the truth. I still don't know. I still don't know what the answer is to this, because there were so many different, you know, story tracks from the local MP to, oh, this might be, you know, foreign actors at play here in a setup. I still don't know what the actual answer is to this. So for him to say, you know, time for everybody to accept the truth on this, well, I don't know what that is. So, I mean, I think the Conservatives, frankly, have a good, you know, a good topic here. They've been hammering on it. It seems to be doing quite well for sure.
Yeah, Bob, that's my problem, too, is that because of the different storylines, if there'd just been one storyline, I think this would be less of an issue. But the government's digging itself into a hole here, don't you think?
Well, look, this whole India trip was not the high water mark for the federal Liberal government. Let's be clear on that. It was a bit of a fiasco from start to finish. But I do think we've set up a National Security Committee of the House of Commons. They've offered to brief the guy through that. It's multi-party. Let's at least do that. And if they're not satisfied, come out and say we're not satisfied. But it strikes me that, you know, we should try to get to first base before we get home.
Okay, well, no one's going home. They might have another filibuster on this. We'll stay tuned for that. We come back on the other side of this break, though. We're going to talk about something else going on in Ottawa around the question of privilege and not the parliamentary kind. Back in a moment on Global News Radio, 640 Toronto.
Time to talk politics.
We will not tolerate unparliamentary conduct. I will not tolerate heckling.
It's Tasha's political panel.
All right, it's time to talk some more politics with Bob Richardson of National Public Relations, Jamie Ellerton of Canaptus Limited, and Sally Hauser of Navigator Limited. And we're going to talk privilege, not the parliamentary kind, though. When you think of privilege, you usually, in the context of the House of Commons, think of the right to say something in that chamber and not be sued for it. You've got the right to speak your mind, and that's what being a politician is really all about. But sometimes you speak your mind outside the House, and especially on Twitter, can turn into a giant minefield. This is what's happened to Selena Cesar-Chavanez. She is the MP for Whitby. And after the budget, her colleague, Maxime Bernier, on the Conservative side of the House, tweeted out that he was upset with the use of the word racialized in a tweet by Immigration Minister Ahmed Hussein in reference to the budget. And he wrote, "What's the purpose of this awful jargon? To create more division for the Liberals to exploit." Selena Cesar-Chavanez did not like this. She responded to him, "Maxime Bernier, do some research or a Google search as to why stating colorblindness as a defense actually contributes to racism. Please check your privilege and be quiet." It was that last bit of the tweet that got people very upset because it does fly in the face of the whole spirit of debate in the House of Commons. And the whole concept of privilege is a very, very thorny lightning rod, I guess you'd say, on places from university campuses to, well, I mean, even the corner store. People talk about this, and a lot of people are very upset by where that conversation goes. Where this conversation has gone, though, now is the Rebel Media website. They call themselves the Commander. Ezra Levant, founder of the website, did a whole rant about 20 minutes criticizing Cesar Chavez for this tweet and a bunch of other things she said regarding microaggression against minorities. She herself is a black woman and makes no apologies for speaking out on issues of race and racism that she says has happened to her. And the prime minister is now standing behind a tweet, a hashtag, here for Selena. Some people are saying that this isn't appropriate. You know, whatever you think of rebel media, the issue shouldn't be that. It should be how much leeway MPs have to speak their minds on these kinds of issues. And I guess also how to speak their minds on Twitter, which, like I said, has really become a minefield for all sorts of awful things on both sides of the ledger in terms of our public discourse, whether it's politicians or individuals speaking out. So, Sally, I'm going to ask you the question first. Whatever you think of Ezra Levant and rebel and that kind of thing, is this the right stance for the prime minister to take on what she said? Because she did tell another MP, she did apologize later, but she said, you know, check your privilege.
Yeah, I mean, I think, frankly, everybody's being a bit thin-skinned on it all. I mean, she acknowledged that she got pretty hot on Twitter, sent what I thought was a very reasonable kind of message to Maxime Bernier, and he kept having his nose out of joint on it. You know, whatever I think about Ezra Levant, which is not much, I mean, in that same post, he talks about the racist black nationalist, you know, Malcolm X. And it's just like, you know, people do have to be careful on Twitter. But it's just fascinating to me to see how something like this, these micro blogs, which is essentially what it is, all of a sudden starts dominating kind of the national, you know, national news. And here we are talking about it today. I think it's a convenient distraction, frankly, and I hope it passes soon.
Okay, Jamie, what are your thoughts on this? Because it isn't passing. You know, this hashtag is trending all over the place, and she even posted a really, you know, tearful statement. She's in tears on Twitter saying, thank you for standing behind me. So, you know, this is taking on a sort of a DEFCON 4 level now in terms of social media. You know, who's right, who's not here? I mean, should she be out there on these issues? Or is the role of an MP to, I guess, not necessarily speak out on every personal issue that affects them?
I think the answer to that last question is actually a bit of both. I think MPs should be out there engaging in debate and perhaps talking about some of the uncomfortable issues of our time. But when you look at kind of how polarized the two opposite ends of this debate have become, there's a ton of people left in the middle who just shake their heads and wonder why they even bother. If you look at some of the rhetoric that's been employed, I think when you hear of those who have faced racism and some who view it as to be systematic, there is indeed perhaps more we can do as a society to help those overcome those burdens and to make sure that there's greater awareness to it. But when your rhetoric then goes to taking down other abilities, people to speak and other people's to engage, that's not solving anything or moving us forward as a society. And I think to kind of quote Ian Capstick, who recently resigned from political punditry, I think some more empathy could probably be involved in this discussion. So I think she brought some of this heat of this debate on herself in getting so hot with her DEFCON 4, I believe is the reference level of activity that you just cited here now. But this is, I think a lot of people in the middle of this are just kind of shaking their heads wondering why it's sucking up so much oxygen.
Yeah, well, she did also criticize Bob Fife. You mentioned, you allude to that on CTV, who said there's no systematic racism, as he put it. I think the word's actually systemic. But she criticized him as well. Bob, you know, obviously these are important issues to engage on, but the way she's engaged on it, is that what our MPs should do? Or should they take a more measured approach? Is that possible when you yourself have been a victim of racism?
Well, you know, I think a bit like Sally and Jamie, it's a little bit of both. I think we need to be careful about some of the language we use around people's ability to speak, particularly people who are elected to the House of Commons. They have a right to speak out on issues. I may disagree with their views, but they have a right to speak out on issues. And I think we have to be very careful with our language around there. On the other hand, you know, my understanding, this is a smart, hardworking, good member of parliament. She's well educated. She obviously feels very passionately about these issues. And she's also sitting in a House of Commons not exactly filled with a lot of black people, and probably feels some responsibility to represent the black community too, and to voice some of the concerns about racism that are quite frankly likely legitimate. So, you know, I kind of come down in that middle group. I think Jamie was talking about where you kind of go, you know, let's be careful about how we say some of these things, but people should have an opportunity to express their points of view, and she certainly should have an opportunity to represent concerns when it comes to racism and concerns in the black community.
Yeah, I think she, you know what, honestly, I know her from Whippy. My daughter actually interviewed her when she was running for office, and she is a very empathetic person, very hardworking, and I do believe that she's speaking from the heart on here, and it's unfortunate this has sort of degenerated into this situation. On the other hand, I disagree with her, but I do respect her ability to state her point. So we're going to leave it there. Free speech, and free speech should win the day, I think, in any political context, including on this panel. Thank you, Bob Richardson, Jamie Ellerton, and Sally Hauser for being our political panel today.
And happy Easter.